streaming live at newhavenindependent.org. Good morning. I'm Babs Rose Ivy. Welcome back to the second hour of Love Babs Love Talk. As promised, we are going to unpack this Texas situation, and I've got some folks who know exactly how to do that and know some have some real understanding of what this Texas legislation means to the women in Texas, but most importantly, what it means to the rest of us around the country. I have Gretchen Rafa. Senior Director, Public Policy Advocacy and Organizing for Planned Parenthood Southern New England, and Liz Gustafson, State Director of Narrow Pro-Choice Connecticut. And just let me let people know, I am on the board of Planned Parenthood Southern New England, so I am hella biased and hella committed. So good morning, ladies. How are y'all?
Good morning, Babs. Nice to be here. Thank you for inviting us.
Oh, this is important. This is a conversation that's too important not to have it with the people who know something about it. So let's get started. Tell me, Gretchen, what does this legislation say?
Yes, Babs, it's a really difficult week. This law that was passed in Texas, really what happened is stunning, right? In the dead of night, the Supreme Court ignored 50 years of precedent and set back the hands of time, essentially allowing Texas to, you know, be a pre-Roe state where abortion is now really hard to access. And really what it comes down to is the cruelty. The cruelty is the point in this decision. The Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision allows Texas's unconstitutional 6-week abortion ban to go into effect. And, you know, for many people, 6 weeks is before they will even know that they're pregnant. So although Roe v. Wade remains the law of the land, SB 8 in Texas is designed to deny the right to abortion that has been guaranteed to people since that landmark ruling in 1973. And one of the most disturbing parts of this law is it empowers vigilante bounty hunters and incentivizes them to surveil and harass people. What Texas is doing
is true.
That is true, Babs. That is
seriously,
true.
Is that true?
It is true. The way the law was written, Texas is basically rewarding residents for up to $10,000 to, you know, sue thy neighbor, not love thy neighbor, but sue thy neighbor, and reward people who snitch to the state because the state put it on private citizens to, you know, report on pregnant people's private lives and the decisions they're making. This is an absolute travesty for the 7 million women of reproductive age in the state of Texas and everyone who supports access to safe legal abortion. And I can't say this enough. The impact of this heinous abortion ban cannot be understated because overwhelmingly, who's going to be harmed by this law? It's going to be Black people. It's going to be Latinx people, people with low incomes, people in rural areas who already face immense barriers to healthcare access. Babs, this is the loudest alarm yet that abortion rights are in grave danger in Texas and across this country. And, you know, Planned Parenthood and our supporters are listening, and we're going to continue to fight back for patients and their providers and their loved ones. But this is a very dangerous, unprecedented law.
So, Liz, should we be concerned? Should we be worried?
Absolutely. I think Gretchen provided a great summary of how extreme this law is and also how indicative it is of a national agenda to completely end access to abortion in this country. This law, as mentioned, sets a dangerous legal precedent and could clear a path for states to override people's constitutional rights. With that said, 2020 already has been the most hostile legislative year for reproductive health and rights since Roe v. Wade. There was nearly 600 abortion restrictions introduced in state legislatures this year alone, and 90 of which have been enacted in states across the country. So between Texas And also, we are awaiting to hear the case at the Supreme Court regarding Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban and Jackson v. Dobbs. The alarms are sounding. And what this Texas law does is provide a roadmap for other states to do the same. Florida has already indicated that they are ready to replicate this law. And I think it, again, it is a wake-up call. Politicians opposed to abortion have been working for decades. And they are doing this in defiance of the American people who support.
So 6 weeks, a woman doesn't even know she's, most women don't even know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. When do you know when you're pregnant?
Well, with that said, as someone who has had an abortion, I did not know I was pregnant before 6 weeks. And I had my abortion around 7.5 to 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And with that said, I was working in repro when I had my abortion and was surrounded by, of course, incredible allies and champions and supporters, you know, who fight alongside all of us to protect and expand access. But at that time, I did not yet personally know someone who has had an abortion. And I think this moment is a really critical moment for us to remember that nearly 1 in 4 people who can get pregnant in this country will have an abortion in their lifetime. And there are people who are our family, our friends, and our neighbors. And it is why I continue to share my story, because it was such an act of love. But sharing my abortion story is community care and is in defiance of the shame and stigma that is perpetuated by the very movement behind this Texas law and behind the law in Mississippi and the wider movement that is even alive and well here in Connecticut.
So Gretchen, Texas has opened the door to this. We know other states are going to try this. What can we do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's so important now to really, again.
And I'm sorry, Liz, thank you for sharing your story. I appreciate that greatly.
Yes, thank you, Liz. And Liz has been such a powerful storyteller in the state of Connecticut and has really helped, again, destigmatize abortion. And I think what's really important to know now is that Congress has to act, right? So what people can do right now is make sure that if you are, and I just want to say too, Babs, as folks are listening, this is not new. You know, there are states across this country that have been, you know, for now decades, been restricting people's access to abortion. And so, yes, there's a lot of outrage around this, and this case is really, this law is unprecedented, and what the Supreme Court decided to do in their decision is unprecedented, but this has been happening now for decades. This has been an effort by anti-abortion lawmakers and, you know, activists across this country, and that's why Congress must really act now to pass legislation and codify Roe v. Wade, which is codifying the right to legal, safe abortion for all people that need abortion care into law, because the courts are not going to protect us. We know that. What they did this week, again, you know, really shows that they have no interest of hiding their position and their agenda to outlaw abortion in this country. So we are hoping and we think that there's a chance that Congress will take up the Women's Health Protection Act, which was introduced by one of our champions, U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal, and this would actually establish a statutory right to for people to receive abortion care in this country and safeguard against these medically unnecessary abortion restrictions that are being pushed forward by state politicians, even if Roe v. Wade is overturned. That's why this federal piece of policy would be so important to pass.
So this doesn't outlaw abortion, it just makes it unsafe, because women are going to find a way to do what they need to do for their lives. So we've already seen this story, mm-hmm, of women back alley kinds of things. to get the kind of healthcare that they want. So this is just going to put women in a precarious situation. And then this bounty hunter component, which I don't understand that piece at all. Like I don't understand what that means. So somebody can just assume that you're pregnant and follow you and harass you and what? I don't hold you hostage until you come to term. I'm trying to understand this part.
Yeah. I can expand on that a little bit.
Yes, please.
So what it really does, it encourages anyone, including anti-abortion protesters, to enforce this ban by suing abortion providers and anyone who helps someone obtain the abortion. So it's not on the patient, it's on the community who provides support. It could even be an Uber driver bringing someone to a clinic. And it allows, you know, protesters who have no connection to the patient to act as, you know, as mentioned, as bounty hunters, to take doctors, health centers, and anyone who helps someone access abortion. Say you've donated to someone who is raising money to afford the care that they needed, and bring them to court and collect up to $10,000 for each abortion. But I also want to reiterate that this was designed to intimidate physicians and other clinic staff out of providing abortion care. We all know that they will not be intimidated by that, but it's also something that, again, is indicative of the movement. And, you know, by continuing to provide care, they could face these ridiculous financial penalties, legal costs, and court orders shutting their doors. And if anyone disapproves of your abortion, your neighbor, a distant relative, some like an abusive partner, or even a stranger, because, you know, anti-abortion extremists are sometimes spend their time harassing people they don't even know to obtain a court order.
I don't understand any of that. Okay, go ahead, Gretchen.
I was just going to say, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to pretend to play one on your show. But I mean, this is really an outrageous framework for a law. And they did it intentionally, right? Like I said, you know, this has been decades in the making of stacking the courts, handpicking judges to sit on federal courts and, you know, get nominated to the Supreme Court. That this was the plan, right? This was the plan of anti-abortion lawmakers. And they did this law purposely like this because, you know, public officials aren't enforcing it. So it can't be challenged right away, because if it was enforced by public officials, someone could challenge it, and then it would be sitting in court, and it would be immediately blocked. But by doing this law, the way it was written, it allows the private citizens to enforce it. So even in the, you know, majority of the justices that, you know, just came out in their decision, you know, they were even talking in their decisions that this is like too complicated to figure out how to, you know, rule on now, because they don't know how it's going to play out in practice. So this is, again, why we're saying this is unprecedented, because this really allows this law to go into effect outside of the normal process that usually happens with the normal legal process that usually happens.
So women in Texas can get an abortion, or they have to jump through a lot of hoops? Like, because I was watching Good Morning America, and they had one of the, I can't call the doctor's name, good-looking man. and he was talking about he had scheduled, like, I don't know, 15, but he could only do 6 because the other ones couldn't because of this new law. So I didn't understand what that meant.
Yeah, so what the law is saying is if there is any embryonic fetal activity, so when they, you know, when they detect that, the provider no longer can provide the abortion to the patient under this new law. So when doctors are talking about the reality of the last, 48 hours or so, they are talking about patients that have come to them you know, that need an abortion and might find out that there's embryonic fetal activity, and then they can't actually receive their abortion. And this is on top of, you know, already hoops and that Texas patients have to jump through, including, you know, mandatory waiting periods, mandatory counseling. It's already really difficult for people to access legal abortion in the state of Texas. There are huge pockets of the state where there are no abortion providers. So talking about driving from one side of the state of Texas to another to find a provider, and then having to wait a mandatory, you know, 24-hour waiting period after you get your initial counseling. You could go in that first day, get your counseling, there's no embryonic fetal activity, and then the next day you go in for your procedure after your 24-hour mandatory waiting period, and you can't get your abortion under this law. So although abortion is still legal in every state across this country, SVA and what's happening in Texas has made it almost impossible for people who need abortion care to access it in a timely and safe way. And it is an essential healthcare, part of reproductive healthcare. And it is time sensitive. And what this law does is make it impossible for doctors to provide care to the patients that need it.
So will women have to leave the state of Texas to get the health care that they deserve?
They might need to. I think that is dependent upon their resources and ability to do so. I do think it's also important that there are resources out there where people can, you know, potentially obtain the medication, like the pills related to abortion care. But again, there's so many things dependent on that. And if they're able to access that, but there are resources out there, but again, they shouldn't have to go through hoops and bounds, and they should just be able to access the care that they need within their communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, to your question earlier, Babs, you know, some people don't have a positive, like might not have a positive pregnancy test, you know, until 4, 5, 6 weeks after, you know, they are pregnant. And so that alone, they might not have that positive pregnancy test until it's too late to access abortion in Texas. And I just want to say, again, bringing it back to who it's going to be harm most, right? We know people that have, you know, the financial means, you know, that to be able to, if they have to fly out of state, will still be able to access abortion, right? But, you know, to the point you were making, we know how this plays out. The people that are most vulnerable, people of low income, Black, Indigenous, people of color, you know, people living in rural areas who are already facing immense barriers to healthcare, that's who these laws are going to impact the most. And when we talk about these laws, we have to make the connection to, you know, the inherent racism within these laws and how they are so rooted in white supremacy culture, that I just want to name that too, because we can also connect the dots to other rights. You know, we're watching the courts strip away voting rights, housing rights. You know, the court is not protecting the most, you know, vulnerable people in our country right now.
So what is the mobilization to happen? Like what can be done? How can people sort of raise their voice in opposition to what is happening in Texas and the other states that are trying to move this through their legislative systems?
Well, I think one of the most important things that can be done is, like, as someone that shares my abortion story, I think if it is safe for someone to share their own abortion story, or at least just say the word abortion and talk about it. Because what the Texas law does is could potentially make people feel isolated. And abortion is incredibly safe, but it is the stigma and shame that is dangerous. And so I think that we need to shift the conversation back to centering the people that have had abortions and that need access to abortion care, and do better as a movement. And again, say the word abortion, because for far too long, anti abortion extremists have controlled that narrative, which has allowed them to perpetuate these kinds of harmful laws. And so I think that that's something really important that can be done. And even if you, you know, haven't had an abortion yourself, again, everyone loves someone who has had an abortion. And mm-hmm. folks might just not know it, but they see how you talk about it online or don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so we have to build that community, because that is how we fight back, because we have to take back that narrative.
And so, go ahead, Gretchen, you wanted to say something?
No, well, I was just gonna say that I think people think that this is, you know, a story that isn't true for people in Connecticut too. Like, you know, our patients and people in Connecticut still struggle to access abortion. And, you know, just to reiterate again, abortion is still legal. And in Connecticut, we actually have it codified, which is in state law. So if Roe gets overturned, abortion is still legal in Connecticut. But, you know, there, the rights being protected, that's just the floor, not the ceiling. We see abortion bans in other states, but far too many residents in Connecticut, you know, can't access abortion because, you know, of their immigration status. You know, undocumented residents in the state of Connecticut are shut out of public and private health insurance. People that have private insurance have high deductible health insurance plans that often force patients to pay out of pocket for the cost of their abortion. And that could be a significant barrier. And again, just tying it back to other, you know, things that happen in people's lives that might make it difficult. So we have to look at systemic racism, we have to look at economic inequity, housing, food insecurity, all the other barriers that create additional obstacles to accessing healthcare.
Wow. Yes. So what are they doing in Texas to sort of fight back? I mean, I'm sure there's a groundswell of support, but what are they doing to rally and to try to, you know, overturn this?
Well, I will speak from the you know, abortion funding side. I think one tangible thing people can do to help folks in Texas right now is donating to abortion funds on the ground, and also advocacy organizations on the ground. And then also there are practical support funds as well. There's one called the Bridget Alliance, and there's another called the Apiary Collective, and they both are funds to help with other needs other than the abortion care itself. So travel, helping cover the cost of childcare and other things like that. So those are two tangible places that money can be donated to if people wanted to take action that way for folks okay. in Texas.
And so Texas is leading the way on this. Some other states are trying to do this. And so what happens if this becomes a widespread issue? Like if you start to see it, these gains, these abortion rights gains lost state by state by state.
I mean, I feel like folks have been sounding the alarm about this for a very
long time.
Yeah.
And as Gretchen mentioned before, like Roe has always been the floor, and reproductive oppression and its forms have been like actively going on. And I think plugging in to your state's fight is so imperative so we can address these intersecting issues. You know, we need the same energy when it comes to fighting back against forced sterilizations happening in ICE detention centers and supporting pregnant people who are incarcerated and taking action on the ground in each state. I think there is so much that needs to be done. And I think this is such an important moment for everyone to wake up to that. It is not just Roe, and it is not just abortion rights. It is, you know, centering and following the leadership of those who have been leading the fight for reproductive justice, and mobilizing and supporting that movement.
So Gretchen, talk a little bit about the kinds of advocacy that needs to happen, the kind of stuff that you do around public policy. How can public policy play a stronger role in these kinds of conversations? Or how can we educate people around public policies to say that women have a right to make the choices about their own reproductive health?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I want to be really intentional in saying that policy is one intervention, because you see that in states where, you know, the majority in the legislature or in a governor's office doesn't support, you know, the right to legal abortion, that works against us, right? So policy is really important. States that haven't codified Roe and the right to legal abortion into their state laws, this is an opportunity to push state policy around abortion, legalized abortion, but also in some of states that have the right to abortion codified, there are barriers because of cost. So the legal rights don't mean anything if you can't access those rights. And so making sure that there's public funding for abortion care, stop separating abortion care from healthcare. Abortion is healthcare, it's a human right. We need more state laws to do what Connecticut does and ensure that people with low income can access public insurance to pay for abortion care, just like any other part of their reproductive health care. And that is really important. And again, in Connecticut, we are very fortunate because there has been decades of pro-reproductive health and rights lawmakers and activists and advocates fighting to protect this into our state law. But that looks like much more in the state of Connecticut. You know, it looks like making sure every undocumented resident in the state of Connecticut has access to healthcare. It means that people can afford a health insurance plan. And we know that in Connecticut, health insurance plans are not cheap. And the insurance industry is lobbying hard to make sure it stays that way, you know, and fighting, you know, things like public options for healthcare coverage or health insurance plans. So I think it's really important to talk about policy and how policy can be improved in our state and across the country. And it really is, I'm going to go back to what Liz said too. It's ensuring that the people that, you know, we elect into office also represent our values and beliefs and understand that healthcare is a human right. And vote. And voting is an important part of this process. The way, you know, these laws that restrict abortion have come to, you know, fruition and into law is that certain, like the people that are opposed to abortion are getting elected into office, and they are using their power to strip away people's bodily autonomy and their fundamental human rights. And so voting is such an important part of this process too.
Yes. Yes. You have to vote out these people who do not respect women's rights to choose. So Liz, does this issue go far enough to galvanize enough women and men and of conscience to help fight this back? Like, will there be a groundswell around this is wrong and people take to the streets, put our pink hats back on and take to the streets?
I believe so. I want to reiterate that this is in defiance of the beliefs and shared beliefs and values of the American people, whose support for legal abortion is at an all-time high. It is in direct opposition to the highest you know, amount of support that we've had. And I think it is, again, an important moment for folks to mobilize and galvanize. And I think making those connections onto how what this means, not just for Texas and what this means for the rest of the country, but what this means for Connecticut and what we can do to stand up and take a lead, because it's not, you know, it's our responsibility to do that as a state. And I think we did a great job doing that this last session, especially when we passed the historic law regulating deceptive advertising practices of anti-choice crisis pregnancy centers, which are the front line of the anti-abortion movement. And so I think that momentum and building off of that momentum is exactly the direction we are going in.
So, question, should we... You know, I grew up with the belief, Gretchen, that, you know, the Supreme Court was on my side. And clearly, I'm feeling like it's not. So how do we move forward in a world where I would imagine people were hoping and praying that the Supreme Court would strike this down. And when they did not, and when they dragged their feet a little bit about a response, then they didn't do anything about it. I think that sort of made people feel a little defeated. I don't know. I mean, talk a little bit about that, because that, to me, that seemed like that was the, not last resort, but that could have undid all of Texas, you know, that Texas legislation.
Yeah, I think that's a really important conversation to be having, that, you know, where the courts are supposed to be protecting our constitutional rights. Again, the way the court made this decision this week, really, you know, and I'm a skeptic, so I'm very skeptical that the court is going to save us right now. The way they did it and going outside of normal procedure and using kind of this emergency appeals process through what's called the shadow docket really shows what their intention is. They did it, and you know, at late at night, but they told us on Wednesday what they believe, that we're not going to enforce a constitutional right for a person to have an abortion. And you know, this is really terrifying that this is kind of where we are at. And that's why we say this is a really stunning act by the courts, because we already knew that their plan is to overturn Roe v. Wade, because the justices that are on the bench, the five majority, already have said that outside of, you know, their time on the court. And it's really knowing that there is an abortion case that they have chosen to take up, the Mississippi 15-week abortion ban in this upcoming cycle, tells us that the court is what their intention is. And that's why it's really important to, you know, to push, again, back to your question about policy, asking the federal government to intervene. We know the president has said yesterday that he is going to be looking into this. His administration is going to be looking into how he can protect, you know, a person's right to legal abortion, and Congress is going to act. But to, you know, really lift up again what's happening on the ground in Texas and other states, it is the grassroots organizing. It is the people that are most impacted, that are on the streets at state capitals, you know, demanding that their rights are protected, and, you know, that politicians and judges are not interfering with people's personal lives and, you know, stripping away their human rights.
I so appreciate y'all coming on this morning to talk about this, to unpack this, because I think we're in for a long fight. And
yes.
And I want y'all to come back on a regular basis so we can continue to mobilize people and to share right information with people about what is happening. Because I think we are in this age of misinformation and sort of right wings spin on things. And I just want us to make sure that the right information gets out to people so they can make informed decisions about how to fight back.
Yes.
And so that's really what I wanted to see happen today. So is there any last thoughts you want to say before we leave? Liz, Gretchen?
I mean, I always have a last thought, Babs, you know me. You know, but I just want folks to know that, you know, we're grieving the loss of abortion access in Texas, but we are fighting back. We are, you know, with our partners in Texas and across the country, Planned Parenthood, our patients always come first, and we're going to do everything we can to help people, help patients get the care they need, you know, complying with an unjust law in Texas, but across our state and across this country. Folks are on the ground helping patients navigate this law, and we are here for you. And abortion is still illegal, and we want to make sure that every person who needs an abortion can access that.
And just to add on that too, NARAL Pro-Choice Connecticut, we are here and we are ready to fight for proactive pro-choice policies in our state, because everyone deserves the ability to decide if, when, or how to start or grow their families in safe and healthy communities. And so we look forward to working with our legislative allies and everyone in Connecticut that wants to get involved. And thank you so much for having us on today for this important conversation.
Well, thank you. I want you to come back. So Gretchen, anytime you want to come back to talk about this, you have a home here.
All right. Thank you, Babs. Thanks for making space
so
for
much.
This important conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. And y'all go in peace. And I will see you out here in these streets protesting.
Fight on, Babs. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. All right. Harry, thank you for putting up all the stuff in the chat. I appreciate it. That was very good. So Harry, you had a chance to read a little bit, and stunning turn of developments.
I did. It's the bounty hunting is more of a civil case issue than a criminal case issue. But yeah, anybody is going to be able to do.
I can't get an abortion in Texas, Harry, but I damn sure could buy all the guns I want.
So if I was reading it right, they could sue you for giving the person a ride.
Yeah, if you're the Uber driver, Harry.
Yes.
Which you are an Uber driver, but you don't drive. But yes, Harry, can you imagine? That's just crazy. But you know what? The courts are not going to. But you know, let me not say that.
You can't say that because it's
already. Somebody's going to drag somebody into court behind this mess, you know.
Yes, somebody's going to drag it into court, but the Supreme Court already decided. So that's going to be a hard one. Now, the one coming up, see, this is basically the Supreme Court said, we're going to let Texas be Texas, right? But the next one, the Mississippi one, is going to be.
Which is the poorest state in the country.
Yeah, it's going to be the big one, because that one will basically kind of rewrite Roe v. Wade. And
the poorest state in the country.
And I was reading, it looks like Amy Coney Barrett will be the swing vote on this.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
Well, we will have them back, Harry, because I want people to understand, I am committed to this cause. I'm committed to women's reproductive health. I'm committed to a woman's right to choose. I serve on the board of Planned Parenthood of Southern New England, and I care about a woman. I have daughters, and I want them to be able to make the choices that they need. I have sons. I need them to be able to make the choices that they need for their reproductive health. So come for me if you must, but this is where I stand.
Yeah. All right.
That's where I'm at, Harry. I just want to put it out there because, you know, because people are going to come at you know how they're going to do, Harry. They're going to put the mark of the beast on me. They're going to say, you know, I'm a whatever. I don't care. Whatever. I'm being called less by less.
I mean, let's face it, Babs, to be truthful, you did get two shots. All right, we got to go.
I'll see you. Enjoy your family. Harry is silly.